And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat, brought to you by BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. I am, of course, Nick Bongrinder, along with Brendan Quinn. Basketball episode today, as it is March, ladies and gentlemen. If I could play the guitar slide CBS intro for you right here, I would, but I can't, because I don't know how, and it would probably be illegal. Brendan, how are you doing, man?
I'm pretty sure that would be the first illegal activity on,
Noel,
on
hey.
This show. At least we will always have that email with written permission to use our intro song. So that's
true.
That's
yes. Good.
That one's street legal. Everything else, yeah. I don't know.
Can't confirm.
Yes, Nick. Happy March.
How about it? Felt great today. The weather's nice.
Weather's breaking.
Yeah, we're getting there.
It is time to basically black out and wait until the end of this thing.
For you, for the rest of us, we get to enjoy the weather. You know, it's a nice springtime out. It doesn't feel like it almost felt like a t-shirt weather today. But in any event, we've got all basketball to talk. Michigan State today, of course. Michigan State last night. What was the final score? 88-70. Michigan, do I get that right? Michigan in a romp, more or less, as Brendan is answering a edit question here on a story. But in any event, we're going to talk about the game itself.
Yes.
All things that happened in the game, and then unpack both teams sort of where they go from here and their outlooks. But I want to start with the game itself. And I guess we'll start with where do you want to start? You want to start with Phil? You want to start with the game? You want to start with Dickinson?
No. Let's.
I mean, there's a lot going on here.
There was a lot for why Michigan won as handily as it did. And some of it is kind of like core identity stuff about this team. And then other parts were just it was a weird night.
Right.
And things went Michigan's way. When you get multiple threes from Terrence Williams and you get a three from Brandon Johns and you get the first half minutes that Frankie Collins gave in place of Devontae Jones, who picked up two early fouls. Like those performances, Michigan comes ripping and tearing out of the gates. They make 9 of their first 10 shots. It is hard enough to win on the road as it is.
Yeah, right.
Even if you're a good team in this league, Michigan State is not. Right now, it is playing like a middle of the pack team. They walked into Chrysler and just got dusted in the first 5, 8, 10 minutes. They're not good enough to come back from a spot like that. And you know, when you can build a lead like Michigan had and you're making threes and then you got a guy like Dickinson in single coverage and you already have the lead, that's lights out because he's just going to keep scoring the ball.
Yeah.
And that's what it was.
Well, I mean, that's what it became later, too, where it was like, are you guys going to do anything different? Are you going to change? No. Okay. Well, they're just going to this game's just going to run itself out because you're right. It felt like that was one where they got out in the first however many minutes. And then you look at the last 10, and it felt like Michigan State had like 3 opportunities, maybe 4 or 5 even to like get in there, make a couple shots, get a couple stops. And it wasn't like, you know, Michigan was necessarily doing anything other than nobody could do anything with Dickinson, and Michigan State opted to just let him, you know, solo them into the ground. So I don't know. I mean, like an interesting day all the way around, but you know, for Michigan, a game that they absolutely had to have and a performance from Dickinson that they probably absolutely had to have. And then, you know, another chapter here in the Phil Martelli saga. So I guess this is just quite a it's quite a day. And you know, I guess what was the sort of what were your thoughts on Michigan going into this? What were your like vibe or what was your expectation for them before the game?
Yeah, I mean, they've just been so up and down. That it's anyone's guess. Michigan State is basically the same thing. You know, like I kind of half jokingly on the pod with Dylan earlier this week, like predicted Michigan State mainly because I thought like Izzo would quite literally kill somebody to get that record breaking win on the court.
In Chrysler.
Yeah. Like it's just there's too much poetry there. Like
bury
just
me here.
That story writes itself. So I'm like, if he's going to, of course, this is how it's going to happen. Right.
Yep.
It just made too much sense for the story. But in reality, Michigan shoots the ball way better at home. It has for a while now. I liked, you know, their defense is what it is. It's not good.
Yeah.
But I liked the way that I liked a lot of what I saw in the game against Illinois. Mm. And that was building off the win over Purdue. So they've been, I think, trending the right way. And like, I think they're growing up a little bit. I think a guy like Caleb Houston's growing up a little bit. I think Musa Diabate's growing up a little bit. Frankie Collins, clearly. And, you know, Devontae Jones has just been terrific of late.
He was very good last night.
All that said, if you would have told me before the game that Devontae Jones and Caleb Houston were both going to pick up two fouls in the first half and have to sit, I'd been like, Michigan's going to be in trouble, mm-hmm. You know? And it wasn't. And that's what happens when you get those, what the hell's the word, everyone? Outlier performance,
yeah. Right?
That's what everyone talks about. Terrence Williams giving them three made threes is that like that feels like 20.
Well, yeah. I mean, in a game like that, it's like the game's over.
Right. Right. Because like Dickinson.
I don't want to boil it down to that, but I mean, you know.
I mean, Dickinson was obviously a little bit better than like he was better than he was in East Lansing, but he was really good in East Lansing, and he got his in that game. He got 18 shot attempts, I think, in that game, mm-hmm. or 19, something like that. And so he can give you that. It's really a matter of what everyone else gives you. They went 3 for 19 on threes in East Lansing,
yeah.
And last night they had 4 made threes in the first 4 minutes. You know, like it's just. Making shots is pretty valuable, turns out.
Well, I mean, like this.
But
is
also, a, like yeah. I thought the defense was better. You know, they had a much better ball screen defense plan. Last time, it was a goddamn disaster. They were a mess between the transition defense and their ball screen defense. You know, last night they went back to that drop coverage that they had used against Michigan State in recent years successfully, and their transition defense was much better. Not only because it was better and they communicated better and they identified their men in transition better, but also because they're making shots.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Michigan State's transit, they were trying to get into transition off of makes as opposed to off of misses. All those things add up to an ass kicking. And that's what you saw like on a neutral court. You know, if they played this game 10 out of 10, I don't know how many times Michigan's running Michigan State, you know.
Yeah, probably not.
But if you're making these shots, you know, then you can get going, and then it's at home, and things just snowball.
Well, and then the thing that you're not mentioning there is the guy that lets you finish the game off in like coasting time, which is Dickinson, who goes right. for 33 and 9, flexes, does the whole bit, puts on his Moritz Wagner heel performance. I'm trying to think, is there other? I mean, there's others. There's a bunch at this point. Like, how many of these guys is Michigan Stauskas?
Incredible performances against Michigan State.
No, like the guy that just pisses them off and annoys them to the end of time. But this was obviously a Dickinson. We'll get into that in a second. But in terms of Dickinson on the court, you mentioned that, you know, all the things he can give you. I feel like earlier in the year, those were things that necessarily weren't always happening. And maybe now they're starting to round into maybe more consistent form in terms of like you can depend a little bit more on him, but not necessarily. So like, I don't know, where is he at, I guess, overall? Like, where do you think he's at right now? Where do you think the next couple of weeks look like for him? I read Austin's story and Phil had a quote that, you know, Hunter felt different or whatever over the last couple of days, looked different, seemed like he was in a better headspace or something. Like, where do you feel like he's at right now? Because obviously all the things we're talking about here, the hot start, everything else, it gives you a win because you have a guy that they can't do anything with. And most teams can't do anything with when he's engaged and on and everything else. So I guess that would be my question there for Michigan.
You know, I thought he physically looked like he was wearing down as much as mentally or whatever his eyes say, right? Like whatever that means. I thought he like looked like he was kind of dog these recent weeks. You know what I mean? And understandably so. I mean, they've had, you know, a pretty condensed schedule.
Well, that's what I mean, right?
But I mean, playing single coverage helps. Michigan State just went right at him with a variety of skinny Marcus Bingham, small Julius Marble, inexperienced Matty Sissoko, and occasionally Joey Hauser. So, yeah, Dickinson will give you 33 if you put those guys on him in his own building, and the guys around him are hitting shots. So, you know, and as he gets going, he is, I think he's also one of these guys who, and Dylan and I talk about this too, like, he's one of these guys who kind of feeds on himself too. Like, once he gets going, he gets better.
Yeah.
And if he gets frustrated, it plays out in his touches and things like that. You know what I mean? Like, but get him going, get that ego dialed all the way up.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Is the frustration
still going away? But I don't know how sustainable that is.
Still TBD.
Like, we still got to see it. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of – he can come and go. And also, so a lot of it is sometimes going to always be dependent on how he's defended. So he can be ready to go and ready to get buckets. But if, you know, a good team's going to defend him with two guys, you know, that's going to be fucking hard to do what he did.
Well, right.
I'm going to give you a 33 on double teams.
But I guess my question is the frustration parts and the parts about him letting his emotions sort of get him off kilter. Because, you know, I mean, he's an up and down guy. That's sort of how he is, right? Like, I think that's
I think so.
What you get with him. So. And that's just good or bad or whatever is what it is. But like,
I think some of it's a maturity thing. Yeah. Like you know, there is a degree of immaturity there, and he's a college basketball player. So you're going to see that. And I think that's how it kind of plays itself out. No,
it does. But I mean, like, to your point, like the being able to fight through, you know, because I've seen him go through spots in games where somebody will defend him in a way that he's not comfortable with or whatever, right? And it'll piss him off, and he'll get, like you're saying, he'll get off of his game, and he'll be the person who stops himself. I feel like we still see that from him a fair amount when I don't feel like we should see it as much or ever. Like, do you feel like those moments maybe are, or is that still, like, that was my question. Like, is that still TBD?
I'm as curious as you are.
Yeah, right. Because that's obviously the whole thing for them, right? Because it's like, if he can shoulder a load like that for a whole game, no matter what, well, then now this is a completely different conversation because you have an X factor player who, if he can get into a zone here, is what I'm saying, over the next couple of weeks, where he can just be like, put it on my back, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean,
is he capable of
like
that? Is I guess the bigger question.
Yeah. I mean, he already did it this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had that stretch from after missing the Illinois game.
Mm-hmm.
He came back, and I mean, he played at the highest of high levels for a sustained stretch there. And it's kind of dipped here.
So now we need to see it.
So yeah, I mean, this is kind of the proving point, you know. But yeah, he said it last night, like, they're not idiots. They are aware of the situation in terms of what, you know, that the season is in the balance right now, and it's winning games. They are right now, they're on the right side of the bubble. But you know, two losses to close this regular season, and then a hypothetical trip to Indy. They could be screwed on that.
I would think that they would be, yeah.
So, you know, he's got to go and do it again. And, you know, last time out against Iowa, which is a game, I don't know where I would – they won. He had 14. He only got eight shots up, or eight twos up, and went over three on threes. But they played through him a little bit. He had 7 assists.
Well, that's the thing I'm talking about. Like, that's what I think that is the next step for him. Is he going to be a guy who can find ways to impact the game and carry them through, you know, these moments? Because I feel like that's literally going to have to happen one way or the other for them either way. And I guess that's – I'm fascinated to see it because he's a really interesting player to watch. Because it's
like, he is. What did you think of all the shit last
night? Well, that's what I was going to get to here. So – I was back and forth because I was off and on with something else, and I turned it back on and I saw the dunk with when he was pointing, and I'm like, well, I know who he's pointing at. I don't have to. I'm like, he's pointing at Izzo. I don't even need to, you know. And I'm like, he's pointing at Izzo, and he's like, get this guy off of me. Bring someone else. What is he saying? Like, too small. Clearly, it was obvious. So
okay, I know he was pointing. I'm just gonna say. Right. I know he was pointing at the bench.
No, he was
pointing. I don't know if he was pointing directly at Izzo. It would be funnier if he was pointing at Izzo.
Well, that's for damn fine. Fair enough. He was pointing at the bench. He was clearly pointing at Michigan State's bench, screaming at them like, not good enough, right? Like, so.
Correct.
Is that just Hunter being Hunter, or is there something more going on here beyond?
No, that's him.
Yeah. That's what I kind of figured, because it was like, I think that's just him in the moment. Doing his thing, and then Izzo getting pissed on the other side of it. But like, I didn't know if there was more to it that was seething under the surface there.
Well, I mean, it's a rivalry, so it's going to be dialed up either way. I don't think it's anything particularly personal. You know, like I don't know of any history between.
I don't think they shook hands, buddy. I don't think they shook hands.
I couldn't tell. I couldn't either.
The camera.
I was sitting next. Wojo had his binoculars because we had to sit on the fucking moon at Chrysler, the worst seats in the Big Ten. So we couldn't see shit. We're all seeing
binoculars.
Yes, exactly. We're all trying to watch the handshake line. Yeah. Can't see anything. And Wojo's like, oh, they didn't shake hands. I'm like, I don't know.
We're taking Wojo's pool report on that. Okay. Dangerous. Just kidding. I love Wojo.
Dickinson said they shook hands, but they didn't exactly, like, you know.
Yeah, like slap hands or something.
I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, Izzo is definitely – he was pissed. He was pissed about the whole thing that, you know, that he's just yelling. He's yelling at their bench, and, like, a part of it is
– I mean, okay.
You can look at it two. You can look at it two ways, I think. One, if you're Michigan State – you don't want him to point at your bench and give you the too small sign and give you the big dick sign.
No.
Well, okay, don't let him score 33.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. The reaction there, if you're Izzo, is to turn to your bench and be like, any of you guys want to do anything about this shit? Or are you going to let him just do this to us all night?
Exactly.
Anybody here want to do something about this? Or are we just going to let him punk our asses all the fucking way back home? Because that's what happened. It's happened the other way. I've seen it happen the other way.
100%.
You know what that game reminded me of? 100%. Dickinson's performance anyway. And the game didn't remind me of this, but Dickinson's like, because the last 8 minutes of the game, like, he could have scored every single time he touched the ball. It reminded me of Draymond's last game against Michigan on senior night. East Lansing. He had like 20 something and 18 and like several assists. Like the game, everything just went through him. And he was like, barely trying and kicking their ass
at the game, like when he
was just a masterful.
Was that the game where he was like kind of questionable because of like an injury and he was like, over my dead body, am I missing this game?
Yeah, it might have been like that. That sounds right
because that's all before me.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds theatrical enough to be Draymond. That might have been part of what was going on there, but it was also like, I mean, he was in the zone that year, but it was also like they were good. But they were not great. They were a one seed, I think, that year. But they, you know, they were one seed because he was so good. But that's what it reminded me of, a guy that was just a complete control of the game, and he knew it, and the other side knew it too. And it was like this awkward because he was talking, you know, the whole game, like, you guys can't do anything with me. This is pathetic. Mm-hmm. Like, that was Draymond's like thing the whole night, right? And that's what it reminded me of. And so when Izzo gets pissed like that, I'm like, dude, calm down. He's 20. You've had guys on your team who've done this to the other side, like, and you will again, I'm sure. Like, what?
Uh-huh.
I mean, part of it I did wonder too. And the other, in the aftermath, is some of that his way of communicating that to his bench, being like, "Hey, Like, this is ridiculous. If you idiots aren't going to do anything, then I'm going to yell and scream.
Yeah. And I also wonder how much of it was like simply working the officials.
Could be.
Being like, well, my guys aren't stopping him. Maybe I can get him a technical.
Right. Yeah.
Something's got to give.
Now, I did wonder that. I really did. Like, I mean, because it's like, I mean, Israel's gotten unhinged before in moments, obviously, like all coaches have, right? Like I did wonder because it was like, is he like, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen him yell at a player like that. Maybe he has, but like that felt
How many opposing players have pointed at his bench?
I feel like Wagner's probably done it. I feel like that's what I was going to say. Like, I feel like Michigan's probably had a couple of guys who might have tried it. But I don't know. That was different. But like, I did wonder if he's like, is that him being like, you know, Jesus, guys, like we got to do something. Sure. This is ridiculous. I mean,
right.
You know, and obviously he was pissed after the game about, you know, we had no answer in the guts, you know, about, you know, they punch us in the mouth and we just completely fall apart. I mean, Izzo was probably furious the entire game. I mean, he was probably at 11 on the rage scale from five minutes into the end because they just had a terrible effort.
It looked like there was like at one point, like you could see him like talking to Malik Hall and it looked like he was trying to be like, you know, go knock someone down. Go do something.
Just go,
you know.
And
Malik's kind of just looked like just dour and down, and like that was the whole thing. I mean, they just look. Michigan State just came in. They got punched in the face, and they never even raised their hands in response.
So that's what I was.
And these things happen, and it's hard when you're on the road, and it's hard when you're not a good team. Michigan State's lost 6 of 8.
Right.
These things build. Right. And the more you lose, the harder it is to respond when these things happen. And I think there was a level of that going on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
And he's blaming it on, you know, he calls it leadership or whatever, but I think really what you mean by that more so is, you know, we need guys who can make plays that get us from A to B, right? Like we need guys that can do enough to get us 3 more stops so we can run out and get 3 more layups. Like, you know, we need that. That's leadership, I think, within what they do. And when you watch them, that's what we said we were going to talk about both sides here. I mean, like they're in a bad place here. This does not look like, I mean, they seem like they're in a good spot with the tournament. And we talk about that in a second, but like, this doesn't look good like at all. You know, it reminds me of some of their really, really rough patches, but even like in recent years where they've had those rough patches, they've always had guys on the team that you were like, well, that guy will grow up and, you know, it'll be fine. You know, I look at this one and I'm like, you know, I can see with some of the guys, but I don't know. This one feels a little bit different. Where are you at with them overall right here? I know he's still frustrated for all the reasons we just talked about, but
right.
Where are you at with them just in general?
I mean,
because this, you know what I'm saying? This doesn't look,
they're going to be, let's put it this way. They're not going to have a player on any of the top 3 all Big Ten.
No, that's what I'm saying.
There is a limit to the talent.
Yeah.
And there's guys who are going to, you know, Max Christie's going to be good. And, you know, like Malik Hall's good and Gabe Brown has his good nights and all this stuff. But like only very rarely do you see everyone play well at the same time or even the majority of guys play well at the same time. And them have kind of that shit kicker.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Like they do lack that.
Yeah.
You know, I think they can be a pretty damn good defensive team at times. And then other times, you know, other times I mean, they helped Purdue to 68 points on, or sorry, 65 points on 65, Saturday. Yeah. So like,
and won the game.
I don't know how ready I would be to say like,
that's why it's a different, it's an interesting
this game defines them yeah. when they just beat Purdue.
No.
Okay. And Purdue's yeah. kind of going a little sideways here as well. But look, that game, they were without A.J. Hogard, who I think was going to be extremely important in the way that they
were
going
to plan to try to beat. Yeah, right. They're not winning that without him.
He was not at 100%. And when he was out there, he was a liability, if anything. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and they just look, if Michigan doesn't come out and just get red hot at the beginning and make 9 of their first 10, that could have very well been a different game.
Could have been, but so
how much do you kind of say like?
Yeah. All right. Right. Yeah.
Fuck. You know, sometimes teams make shots.
They do. They do. And I think it's important to note that they did just get that win against Purdue because that was on the other side of a rough little stretch. I mean, it's been rough. You know, that's what I was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been rough here more than it's not been. And you know, it looked like people were panicking about the whole. You know, I thought maybe some of that panic was a little bit much, but like people were panicking about whether or not they were going to get in like 2 weeks ago. And it's just, they're not, they don't seem yes. to be in a great spot. They don't seem to be.
They've won like, three all, games but, in 30 days.
Jesus.
Okay. So it's going to be hard to feel good
yeah.
about what you're seeing there.
Yeah.
And now they go to Ohio State, and Ohio State's very shorthanded. They lost to Nebraska. And then they get Maryland at home. So, you know, I would guess that, they split these last two. You know, that puts them at 20-11 going into the Big Ten to get a win there. And then they're going to go to the tournament. They're going to be a fucking 9 or 10 seed. And they'll probably lose in the first round. And then the season will be over.
Okay. And then what? Because like this feels.
Well, I don't know. They're going to bring in new guys. Some of these dudes will move on. And I don't know. But like, there is a story to be written here, and that
it's interesting.
I get to at some point, like a big picture thing.
It's interesting.
Like, their talent,
it's not good enough.
Is not good enough right now.
That's what I'm getting at. Like, it's not, yeah. something needs to change here. Is what I'm saying. That's what I'm. Now, that's what I'm getting at. It feels to me like if they want to do the things that Tom Izzo's program has done for the last 20 something years, something sure. has to change.
Oh, I mean, if you want to have a big picture conversation about Michigan State, I'm down. Okay.
That feels to me like we're getting to that, you know, I mean, to that yeah. point though, right? Like it feels like, no, I'm not saying Izzo has to go. I'm just saying something about what you're doing clearly need, because you just hit it. The talent level on the roster is not good enough. And I don't see that changing as long as Juwan Howard is on the other post look, there.
A lot of this goes back. We've talked about this. I feel like we have. It might've been on the other pod. The 2018 recruiting class was such a miss that it really has come with, you know, a pretty heavy price.
Yeah. Because
this program has been so dependent on those juniors and seniors year in and year out. And that, you know, everyone knows the recipe at Michigan State. This is not some grandiose take. We know what Michigan State does, right? Mm-hmm. That class just wasn't it. It was such a whiff.
Yeah.
You know, no, you know, I Gabe Brown and Marcus Bingham, okay, like, but if it was Gabe Brown and Marcus Bingham and two other guys who were legit, one right. was, you know, a Big Ten,
even
all
one.
Big Ten caliber player, just
yeah.
one.
Just one. Yeah.
Somebody. And instead right. it was, you know, Kithier and Foster Lawyer.
Not
that
so much.
Came with yeah. a heavy price for that, for the whole program. And like the other thing that like can get a little bit distorted is I know, you know, the whole COVID thing mm-hmm. is it does every program was going to go to Final Four in 2020, right?
You're damn right.
Any goddamn coach in the country, their best team
we were rolling.
Was their 2020 team. Yeah, right. Okay. In Michigan State's case.
Yeah.
Michigan State's case though. Like it's pretty legit. Like I think that team could have gone to the Final Four.
Yes. Yeah, they were really good. Yeah, right. Very good.
So the conversation would probably be a little bit different.
That's fair.
If they had just gone to back-to-back Final Fours in 19 and 20.
But things have changed since then.
Yeah.
Michigan's recruiting has changed since then. And I know that they don't recruit against each other for everybody, but it's not nothing. It's something. When Michigan's recruiting at a level like this, it is going to impact Michigan State's ability to recruit. It just is. If they're going to recruit against similar, I don't know. You would know more about it than me, but I feel like
I don't really think that they're crossing paths on recruiting too much anymore. They might have actually more under John, frankly.
Oh, really?
Juwan is hitting very specific AU programs, and it's between people that have like direct ties to him, and then like this, they've been hitting the DMV so hard. That's not really like Izzo's thing.
Okay, well,
so
then fair.
I think Michigan State's issues are, whereas you're right, like the conversation that we've had for so long is that there has kind of been this like interdependency on, who's good and when and how that all works out. Right now, though, I feel like in terms of Michigan State kind of redefining itself as a program and upping that talent level and getting back to where it's supposed to be, it's all Michigan State. I think it's internal. I think it's – look, I mean, he has the same coaching staff he did in 2003. He brings back Monty and he promotes Wojcik. It's the same coaching staff they had in 2003. And now that can be a good thing in terms of, knowing people and your identity and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But like, where are new ideas coming from? You know what I mean? And I don't know.
Where the players,
but come. At the same time, this place does have a way of like, I don't know, old Izzo's, losing a touch and blah, blah, blah. And then they go to the Final Four.
I wouldn't go that. I mean, I don't think that that's, I think that's an overreaction. I don't know what we were talking about, but we're going to pivot here to the futures of both teams, because obviously I think Michigan's conversation might be more interesting. So let's save that. We'll go with Michigan State here. We mentioned that earlier, that they're probably fine, right? The win over Purdue probably makes it so that they're fine, right? Like, is that fair to say at this point? Like, you feel like they're a safe in? Is there anything that could happen that would make it, if they lost the next two and then lost the first one, they're still in?
I think they're in.
So the next question then would be, do you feel like there is any possibility at all that this team can make any kind of, can they get to the second weekend? Can they do anything?
I think
is there a recipe or an avenue?
It would be so absurdly short-sighted to just be like, they're not going to do it. Like, they should have beat UCLA last year.
I mean, there's still a lot of time.
And UCLA went to the goddamn Final Four.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, it's just, it's the way the bracket falls. It's, maybe they come out and have that game where they make nine of their first 10 shots. Like, you just have
two full weeks left here,
100%.
Like, yeah.
The thing is, same as it ever was, man. You just got to get into the tournament, and then whatever happens. You could get a really good draw, and you ride the wave. You know what I mean? Someone gets, Max Christie just gets on a heater, starts making everything. Gabe Brown gets on a heater. Like, they're also a weird team for a lot of teams to play, and the Big Ten, everyone knows how to scout Michigan State,
Right.
This is not everyone. It's the same damn thing all the time. So, other teams, once you get outside the league, suddenly you're not going against Kofi Coburn and Zach Edey and Hunter Dickinson when you're just like, Jesus Christ, how many of these guys are there in this league? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You go play.
That's always the case in the Big Ten. Yeah.
You go play the team that finishes third in the ACC.
Yeah.
Michigan State might be one of the best teams that they've played in the last month.
That's a fair question. It's like, are we going to see? I wonder if we see some of that. Like, if they get away from this and, you see somebody else, maybe it changes. But it's also like, he's been so upset with his leaders, and he closed the locker room that day there. Did he ever answer a question on any of that? He just says
they were getting out of there. And
well, I think it speaks to they're young and they're not
downplayed it.
He doesn't trust them, is what it feels like, right? Like that, it doesn't feel like he fully trusts the team in ways that we normally would see that from his teams right now, March 2nd. You know, and I do think you got 2 weeks to maybe find some of that, but I question if they're going to get it at all, because typically when Michigan State's really good, it's, you know, coach and team know what they're, you know what I mean? Everybody is on the same, and it does not feel like that's happening here. It feels like Izzo was like, let's get the damn thing over with. Okay. So we can move on, but I could be wrong. And I guess you got 2 weeks, I guess, left. And I think that was something I saw people in complete panic today. And I'm like, I know it's March, but you do still have some time here. You got 2 regular season games and the tournament, and that's a lot of time. Like, it just in terms of time to gather yourself. So I think you're right. I wouldn't write off probably anything at this point.
Yeah, I mean, they are who they are. It's just going to be a matter of
if it falls.
It's a team that they can beat Purdue and they can lose to Rutgers.
Right.
it's just the way it is. Yeah. Like they're 40th in KenPom right now.
Good God.
That's what this Michigan State team is. And that's not going to change 2 weeks from now.
No, that's the way it is. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they're going to be seated where they should be seated.
Well, that's another conversation.
And they're going to be they'll be the lower seed in whatever game that is
for the offseason. For Michigan, probably a more interesting conversation because it's not a certainty, of a certainty that they're in. Yeah. But also, you flip that and you say less of a certainty that they're in, but maybe more of a possibility that if they do get in, that they actually do something. But I don't. But also, maybe not because they're.
I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I do think that's fair. Yeah. They have a higher upside because they have greater talent.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter Dickinson is Hunter. Like, he gives you a chance.
Right.
He gives you a chance. You know what I mean? And as long as you have a guy that you know, that son of a bitch, if I get him 15 or 20 shot attempts, you can win a game. You know what I mean? Michigan State doesn't have anything resembling, not even remotely close to that, you know? So Dickinson gives him a chance. And then you still do have high-end talent around him, you know, and Caleb Houston and Diabate and Eli Brooks is, you know, one of the most reliable veterans in the game, even though that shot at the end of the first half last night was horrific. and then a guy like Devontae Jones, who, you know, it's game by game
better.
You just like him more, you like him more. And he's really kind of gotten his hands around this thing. So, yeah, like Michigan State or Michigan is a team that, like, I would not want to see them in the bracket.
Yeah.
If they're there. And at the same time, if you told me that they're going to go lose the next 2 games, I wouldn't even bat an eye.
They might not get in.
Why not? It's like if they get in, they can go to 3-16 or they can lose and not make it.
And be the first out in the NIT or decline the bid to the NIT.
All right. Like there's a potential, very delicious scenario
of
Michigan in that 8-9 game against Indiana, both programs, you know, basically you're in if you win.
Yeah.
And then the winner gets Wisconsin.
And then we get
Juwan
Guard part 4.
His first game back or his second game back. It'd be his second game back.
So where are they at right now with all of that whole situation? I mean, the Bartelli thing, I know you wrote about this. It's about to be published here. This is all, I mean, and also, you know, what is Juwan, do you know what he's doing right now? Like,
he's just at home. He's at home just walking around waiting until he can come back. And, you know, Dickinson said last night that he and Jace went over to the house to see him yesterday.
Right.
You know, I know, like, program personnel, I think, have been through the house and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, he's not allowed on grounds of the university, basically. So he's just sitting there waiting, and he has not spoken. I've seen zero indication that that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know. Yeah, and, you know, I'll be really curious to see how it plays out. Like, if he thinks he's just going to go to the Big Ten tournament and be like, I'm not talking about what happened. Like, he can't.
Well,
he can
do whatever the hell
he can do whatever the hell he wants. But
honestly, he needs to talk before he leaves. He needs to talk before he leaves.
You go tell him that.
Now that you're bringing that up, because, and this is a lesson that was learned, he needs to start listening to people. I think, right? Like, is that not something that came about through all this? I guess that's something that we'll see. But, you know, I mean, the team seems to have handled it fine, you know, like all things considered.
That's the thing.
We own it all. Yeah.
You guys like you, me.
And I think we
fans
do that.
Fans out there, other people are going, they'll be freaking the hell out about something like this, right?
Yeah.
The guys on the team, those 12 dudes.
Mm-hmm. They don't care.
Yeah, they're just playing. They're just like, oh, we're out. This sucks. You know, Juwan isn't around. Oh, okay, we're just going to go.
Gotta play.
I still really want to play. So, yeah. You know, I don't
know. Year.
I don't know if he's going to talk. If I had a bet.
Well, what about Phil then? How's Phil? What does this mean for Phil? This is quite the situation. I saw him do the double fist pump with a minute to go. Uh-huh. I was like, you know, uh-huh. The game's not over yet, Phil. Okay. But you got to finish it off.
Yeah, yeah.
A hell of a win for Phil last night. Stops Izzo from setting history in Chrysler. What's.
Phil Wooden over there. Great coach. And he just told his team, go make every shot. And they did that, and they got the big win over Michigan State.
What a stretch of time here for Mr. McCoy.
I mean,
I would say, right? Like,
it's just,
my God,
it's just so preposterous.
Is that the word you're going with?
It's the only word. Like, so I've kind of known, like, since this all went down last Sunday with Wisconsin, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to write a Martelli story sometime in this stretch, right? I just, the way it is. Was kind of waiting for the right time, you know, and all right, now they go and beat Michigan State, and it looks like he's trying to wrap his mind around exactly what
just happened.
So, yeah. So, you know, we went back last night, and, you know, we talked for, you know, half hour or so afterward. And yeah, man, like, look, part of what I wrote in the piece is like, you know, this isn't what he came. He didn't come to Michigan to become a head coach again,
right?
Not only at Michigan, but I mean, like, in the greater context,
right,
of things. Like, look, if somebody called, right. Mm-hmm. If, like, I think Fordham might've kicked the tires last year, or some other teams, like an A-10 school or Delaware or one of the Philly schools. Yeah. He'll listen.
Sure.
But I don't think he came to Michigan being like, oh, 2 years, I'm going to turn that into a head coaching job and I'm back, baby. You know?
Yeah.
He came to be part of something very big.
Yeah.
And understanding, like, to go from St. Take it from
Oh,
me.
My God. Yeah.
To go from St. Joe's to Michigan is
to the Big Ten. Yeah.
It is another planet. Okay.
That's like what Beilein used to talk about. Like, it's the Big Ten. It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think he wanted to get kind of like a taste of how the other side lives.
And charter. Yeah.
And you know, the chance to be kind of a coach to a coach, you know, and help Juwan through this process. And he talked to you and I about this back in the day when it all went down. So like the fact that he just like that is okay, you're the head coach again. Go be Phil Martelli. Like, that's a weird thing, man.
Yeah, that is.
And to be comfortable being yourself and also like have self-awareness of like, I'm supposed to act like the head coach, but I'm not the head coach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm supposed to manage the staff, but I'm part of the staff.
Right.
Okay. And I'm going to speak to the media as if I am the face of the program, but I'm not the face of the program. Right. So there's all these layers. And for someone with like Phil's personality, I think to try to maneuver through all this kind of weirdness is profoundly strange. And the fact that he's the head coach at Michigan right now. It's just ridiculous. And you know, he's opposite Tom Izzo last night.
Yeah.
Izzo's going for his record-setting all-time wins leader in the Big Ten, passing Bob Knight. He gets a chance to do it on his rival's court, who he has loathed for 20 years.
More than anything in the world.
More than anything in the world. And here, with the night that he has a chance for the ultimate double bird, I set the record on your own goddamn court. Suck on that. I'm out of here. Right? Yeah, right. Which is what he would have loved to have done with
Jamal. Against a member of the Fab Five.
Oh, unbelievable symmetry here. Instead, he gets Phil, who is one of his best friends in the business.
Right, yeah, forever.
They go to half court in the beginning of the game. They tell each other they love each other.
Yeah, I saw their hug afterward, too. It was pretty good.
And they said they loved each other after the game. I was talking to Phil. He's like, man, it reminded me of Dumpf back in the day. So, like, one of his best friends is Fran Dumphy, right? Former longtime coach at Penn and Temple.
Yep.
It's like, oh, yeah, it really reminded me of Dumphy. And I'm like, what is going on here? How has this happened?
You know, where am I? Right.
So, I mean, so much of it is wrapping your head around the situation and, like, just watching him go through this has just been really, really interesting. So, I mean, I'll encourage people to go give that a read.
Well, I mean, he's hailed it well. I mean, this is why they hired him, sort of. No one thought Juwan Howard was going to slap a coach, but, I mean, in a larger sense – Phil was here to do whatever. That's what he told us when we sat down with him. He's like, I'm here to do whatever Juwan needs me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he knows that. And like, in a large way, like a large scale way, like I'm here to be, you know, the guy in his ear and the guy that he can trust to do whatever. And it seems like it's been very good for them. It just seems like it's been a really good fit for Phil at a time when he really needed a good fit, you know,
and one of like one of the particular areas where like, man, they are fortunate that this is the stopgap, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term, right? Is like him in these press conferences.
Oh my
is
God.
Yeah. Hilarious. Okay.
All see the thing about Lenardi the other day that he said,
I'm standing in the back of the room and like, you just see. And part of this is because Phil's very good at this. But the other part of it is that he couldn't be any further from Juwan. Because Juwan says nothing ever to the point where, like, people don't even ask questions anymore. Okay? So it is, like, the most severe 360. Okay? So now you stand at these press conferences and people are there filling notebooks. They're raising their hand. Get the microphone over here. Everyone's just, everyone's engaged. The cameras are zooming in on him. And he's talking for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's 20-minute press conferences. So, you know, to have a guy who can get up there and do that in a spot where, like, you need some delicacy.
Sure.
In what you say and how you say it. And he's up there, you know, and no matter what, it's – credit to Howard Eisley, credit to Saadi Washington.
Yeah.
Because he knows both of them are just as capable as he to get up there and do the job right now.
Totally.
The difference is those are the guys in line for head coaching jobs, not him.
Right.
You know, like Saadi Washington, if it were Saadi, who's been there longer than Phil, if he goes 4-1 in this handles the press conferences well, you know, that's some juice there, man. His agent. Mm-hmm. is going to be texting and it's go time. You know what I mean? And instead he's still, you know, he's coaching the defense.
Yeah.
And he's not getting that. So Phil, he's up there last night, you know, Saadi Washington's game plan, flawless. Howard Eisley's offensive play calling, flawless.
Yeah.
So he's doing, like, he's pushing those buttons.
Yeah.
Well,
as you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
It just seems like it was a really good bringing him here was a very good decision and move by all. And I think for him, you know, like if he looks back on it, right? Like it was like, I remember when we first talked to him, when he first got here, it was like, he didn't know how anything was going to go, you know, like didn't know his way around. He was still lost walking around the building. So like, yeah, it's good to see. Like, it feels like it was a good move by someone who was at a really weird point in his career anyway. And then now all of a sudden it's been a weird ride here, but all things have been pretty good there. Yeah. Weird though.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
Anyway.
And you know, and then it's two games to go and then sit back down.
Yeah. Well,
so it's like this very, just, it's this window where it's just like, hey, go be yourself for 2 weeks and then sit, you know, sit on back down. And, but yeah, I mean, as like, as just something to kind
of, but he can handle it, like, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure. I think so.
That's why it's, I just think it's a great, it's a great fit. It so weird. Your coach punches a guy and your interim is like a Hall of Famer who's like, well, I've done this 10 million times, so no big deal, you know, and you just move on. And then 3 nights later, you beat your biggest rival by like 20.
I mean, that's the other thing is like,
what? Like, you,
because of his career
and
who he is and the connections that he has, like, it's almost exhausting, like the levels, like every game you could turn into, like,
you could,
here are the 6 degrees of separation that make this insanely weird that he's playing this
game, right? Babysat that guy's dad or something like that.
Look at his first three games. Okay, so his first three games, all right, Rutgers.
Yeah.
I tweeted this. I had like a tweet thread about it after the win over Rutgers. So I apologize to anybody that already read this and has to hear it again. But like, so Rutgers, after the 0-1 season at St. Joe's, they went to the NCAA tournament. They almost beat first seeded Stanford, the Collins Jacobson team.
Oh, yeah.
Almost beat them. So he had some juice. Rutgers tried to hire him. So he could have taken that job. So it's like, what are the odds that, you know, a team that offered him ends up in the Big Ten? He beats that team 20 something years later as the head coach at Michigan. And then the Michigan State thing. Okay. You have all the Izzo ties. Okay. Yep. So now he's going to play Iowa. Okay. Who's the head coach at Iowa?
Yeah. A guy Fran from McCaffrey. Philadelphia. Yeah.
Where's Fran McCaffrey from? Philadelphia. These two probably known each other
forever. Yeah.
40 goddamn years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just one after another after another.
Well, that's because he knows every living soul in the game of basketball. That's just because that's him.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I think that's just
when you're in it for 50 years.
I think that's just the uniqueness of Phil Martelli. Yeah. I think it's cool. You think it's weird. You'll think it's cool. You'll think it's cool in a couple of weeks. But I thought it was pretty darn cool. Like, that was pretty cool, I thought. You know, for a guy like that, that everybody knows as a good guy, like genuinely, Izzo will probably even someday be like, that was pretty cool that Phil got a win or whatever. Maybe not so much, but like a little bit on some degree. So I think that's kind of neat. But anyway, I don't have anything else. If you do, my man, interesting couple of weeks coming up here as the tournament rattles down the tracks. You wanted to talk about Mel Tucker being in the crowd.
How about that?
That was the one thing I forgot about to say. Mel Tucker getting some FaceTime last night. How about that?
I'm digging Mel Tucker's basketball vibes, man. The last game, the Purdue game, he's sitting in the Izzo, in the front row.
He was in the Izzo? Where was he at last night? I saw him courtside, but I don't know.
The game against Purdue, he spent the first half at
the
center court front row seat in the I zone with a rally towel, cheering it up, legitimately cheering with the students. And he spent the second half on his courtside seat on the opposite side. And then last night, he
courtside clapping and, you know, he was getting into it.
Oh, he was revving up the guy. Like when they came out after halftime, he was like, you know, trying to hype up the dudes and all that stuff. And like, look,
he knows what he's doing, man.
You know, I'm sure part of this is like,
he is a savvy dude.
Is that, man?
I like Mel Tucker.
That school's about to pay you $100 million. Go cheer on the team.
That's true. That's true.
I get that. But like, I think it's a great, whatever the motivation is, I think it's a great look. I think it's awesome. And he does seem engaged. It's not like he's there and on his phone and bullshitting around. Like he's watching games. When he sits courtside at Breslin, he's yelling at the refs like as much as Izzo.
Yeah. I mean,
that's like, an exaggeration, but
he gets it. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's the thing I would say. It was interesting because I think he's the first guy I can think of. Brady Hoke did that. He went to a game in East Lansing, sat right behind the bench and got just destroyed by the Izzone for the whole game. And Michigan State kicked their ass. I mean, it was like, and Brady sat there the whole game and laughed and like had a great time with it. Another guy who got it right for the same reasons I think we're saying with Mel Tucker, but like, yeah, it's just interesting. You brought it up. Like, I think twofold. He is never going to turn down an opportunity to be in front of a national television camera or audience. And that was that. And two, more importantly, I think that he does. I think he does feel like he's part of the community and gets the uniqueness that they have there with the basketball team. You know, I think that that's something that he's embraced. They have the Keon Coleman, playing for Izzo right now. So, I mean, I think that he gets that whole culture of it. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not it's not football versus basketball. It's not a bad thing that basketball takes air. I don't think he sees it that way at all. I think that's kind of cool. So I like Mel Tucker. Hard to not Mel Tucker, right? I mean, like, pretty good dude.
Part of it is when you're the forward facing head coach of the high profile team and you make all the money, you're still part of an athletic department.
Yeah.
Okay. And like Juwan Howard gets that. Juwan Howard's is at like gymnastics meets and
almost everything,
and baseball games, and he's always on the field at football. And you know he's out there hugging Harbaugh when he beats Ohio State.
Right. Like, he goes to everything.
I think like Juwan Howard recognizes that like he's part of the University of Michigan.
Kansas Donuts out, right? Yeah, right.
Same thing. Yes, yeah. Mel Tucker recognizes that he's part of Michigan State.
I agree.
And you know, like it's got to be hard. To an extent, I would think, when it's like, cause Izzo is Izzo.
And he's making more than him now.
Right. You know? Right. So like being able to like carve your place and be like, hey man, you know, like Izzo's Izzo and this place is him.
But I think that's like, also,
but I want to be part of it. You know what I mean? That's a good play.
I think that that speaks to his respect for Tom Izzo as well. I think that, that also, that's what I would say. That's as much as, my read on that would be as much as anything that that's Mel Tucker showing Tom Izzo how much he respects and cares about their friendship because they have had a, you know, relationship over the years, but I think he respects everything he's done, you know, obviously at the school, but the fact that you see him at those games like that, I think it's in part he's recruiting because he's always recruiting, but in part, I do think the longer he's been there and since we've gotten away from COVID, you can sense that, you know, he definitely gets that whole vibe of, you know, what a college football coach is supposed to do and supposed to be and everything else, which is cool. Not everybody does that, as we know. Everybody does that. So all props to him. That was cool to see.
Yeah. How about Wisconsin winning the Big Ten outright in basketball after being picked to finish 10th? Is that not the most Wisconsin move ever?
Are they going to retire Davidson's number after senior day? Like we talked about that Michigan should have done with Naz Hillman. The other day, Brad Davidson.
I don't think Brad's number's going in.
Just hang it. You will never find a more, you know, he represents everything that Wisconsin basketball has been my entire life. I can remember watching Wisconsin basketball all the way back to, what was it, Dick Bennett? It's never changed. It has been the same.
I mean,
am I watching here? they somehow think is great.
They're 15-1. They're 15-1 in games decided by 6 or fewer points. 16-1. It's impossible.
I respect it. I don't have to like watching it, but I respect it. You know,
we were having conversations throughout the year on the other pod about like, okay, what's going to be the winning total? And like early on, it was like, you know, man, Purdue might be good enough to get up to 16 or
yeah,
or 17. Man, that wouldn't that be something? Illinois could maybe get to 16.
No.
Wisconsin.
Well, you know what that
means. Wisconsin gets to 16.
You know what that
means.
And
wins it outright.
They're going down in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
I mean, a lot of people are going to be hot on that one.
You better watch that one. They're going to get away from the Big Ten, and then it's going to be like, oh, God, we're a disaster. And the rest of these teams are going to get away from each other and take off. That'll be my hot take.
The only thing that would be funnier would be if they lose to Nebraska on Sunday.
Wisconsin?
No. And open the door for a share. Because I mean, they stormed the court like they were basically. I'm surprised they didn't bring the goddamn Big Ten trophy right out there and be like, "We are the outright champions." Oh wait, we have to play Nebraska. We don't care about any of that.
What a moment!
I mean, they clinched a share last night, so they did clinch a Big Ten title last night. But it's like the foregone conclusion of the Nebraska game is just hilarious to me, as it should be. I mean, I'm not.
So, what do you think, Michigan? It's going to be. Are we going to get another Michigan Wisconsin game here? In Indy?
Oh.
Is that in the cards?
It better be. Because not only the beauty, Nick, would be not only would it be Michigan-Wisconsin, it would be the one seed game on Thursday, which you know what that means.
Oh, man. Yep.
Noon.
Yep. That's the prime spot. Everyone gets to watch it. Yeah.
Baby.
Okay, well, now I think we're all rooting for that.
You still get dinner and drinks that night. Be a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's that time of year, folks. I saw some women's tournaments on right now. You could watch daytime basketball right now, which is hard to beat, of course, as we all know.
That's right. The OVC getting ready to get underway.
Yeah, OVC today. Are the small men's league starting this week too then?
Yes.
I assume. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. The Horizon has already started. Shout out to Greg Campy and the boys and Mike Davis and the boys. I don't know if they're both still alive. I think so.
And if not,
Luke Jaklich got a win last night for
URSC. Oh, hey, there you go.
I saw they won their first round game.
Friend of the program.
So it's that time. It is that time. It's a beautiful thing. We will be scrambling to get these shows in as I'm flying all over the damn place.
We'll figure it out, though. Hopefully we have an interesting March locally to talk about. It's still tenuous here, but I'm not giving up.
But I'll tell you what, if with my own eyes, I just watched Phil Martelli coach Michigan against Michigan State. So I'm not going
to
say
an 18-point win.
I'm not going to say anything's impossible. So
I agree with that.
Let's leave it on that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, my friend, as always. And to all you listeners, thank you. Leave us a review in the iTunes store. Tip your bartenders and servers.